We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or visit preborn.com.
A phenomenon of new media is the proliferation of streaming. There are many, many streaming channels, and believe it or not, not all of them are providing wholesome content. For that, you can visit stream.afa.net. There you'll find Christian-based lessons and sermons, as well as original movies from American Family Studios. You'll also find video versions of some of your favorite AFR programs. Media has changed, but there's still good stuff available. Find it at stream.afa.net.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, February 18th, and we are just rocking and rolling with the Trump administration and everything that he is getting done. And meanwhile, the left, of course, is filing their lawsuits. They're screeching their rants. They're putting out their, you know, the world is falling, the sky is falling drama. And they are claiming, of course, that there is censorship from the Trump administration for refusing the AP a seat in the White House briefing room because of the terminology over the newly named Gulf of America. And this coming as well as the AP, ironically, is reporting, and I put that in air quotes, Justice Department's independence is threatened as Trump's team asserts power over cases and staff. My governor, Ron DeSantis, responded to that headline with this: the Justice Department is not quote unquote independent of the elected chief executive, but is constitutionally accountable to him. The cries of independence from the left slash media are rooted in their desire to have a heads I win, tails you lose scenario where the bureaucracy exists to facilitate a leftist administration, but to frustrate a conservative administration, election results notwithstanding. That is not how the Constitution is structured or how our government is supposed to function. That is absolutely spot on. And this coming as well as the global stage has been set by Vice President J.D. Vance, who was talking about the difference between censorship versus just common sense and saying you don't jail your opponents for speech that you disagree with. And he also was talking at the AI summit about how artificial intelligence, a technology, should not be used with viewpoint bias, and how America is going to be the global leader in AI. If you have not listened to that full speech, it's amazing. If we have time, I may play it for you later in the show, or we'll just talk with a couple of clips. But joining me now to discuss this whole idea, I think, of what Governor DeSantis just was spot on, was saying that the leftists and the bureaucracy are attempting to frustrate a conservative administration. Is our good friend Steve Dace, who hosts the Steve Dace Show over at The Blaze. And Steve, I think this is exactly why we see this just immediate turnabout in the legacy media, in the lawsuits and all of this, because they weren't crying, oh, judicial independence and executive independence and all of this when Merrick Garland was the AG and they wanted him to just do whatever the Biden administration's lawfare bidding was. But now that Pam Bondi is the AG, then suddenly, you know, the Solicitors General, Pam Bondi, everybody else, literally everybody, even in the executive, has to be completely independent of Donald Trump. And it's just so obvious their gambit at this point.
Morning, Jenna. Yes. And I mean, this is a game plan they have, you know, used against Republicans all of our lifetimes. And it's typically worked. I mean, it worked to some degree even against Trump in his first presidency. Now, his threshold of how much pearl clutching from the media that he was willing to kowtow to, he had a higher resistance level than pretty much every previous Republican president post-Reagan we had seen, or presidential candidate. But eventually, starting with March 16th, 2020, eventually they wore him down. There were many times that Trump would signal, basically Andrew Breitbart's war. The hand-wringing and pearl-clutching and screechings and I can't evens would begin, and he'd back down. In this case, the mistake that was made is they should have killed him when they had the chance. And I just think you're seeing an entirely different Donald Trump since July 13th of last year. That is the variable of the equation that changed all of the math here. And I think that that's finally, for a guy who is driven by he loves to be loved, likes to be liked. And you've seen in the past people like just, complete grifters like Omarosa and, jack of all trades, masters of nuns like Anthony Scaramucci worm their way into his world by giving him that level of genuflection. Only to disappoint / betray them once they get there. I think you're just seeing a different level of resolve from Donald Trump post July 13th of last year. And I think that he has finally now fully become what the system feared as a disruptor, outsider, he could always be. And what his base of people who at times, folks like you and I have not always seen eye to eye with, but I think that he has now stepped into the role of fulfilling all that hope and potential that that people have, a lot of people first put their hopes in him. And I think you're watching this battle now play itself out. And whether it's endorsing people like, a low name ID congressman named Ron DeSantis for governor, and now he's in position where he can make the kinds of statements that you just talked about and fight really a one-man policy war from a governor's perch against the left for the last 6 years, whether it's J.D. Vance, I think that speech they gave in Munich is a top three foreign policy speech in my lifetime. I would rank it just behind the president's speech in Riyadh in 2017 and Reagan's tear down this wall in 1987. I think that you are seeing now that Trump's willingness to actually pursue his talking points fully and vigorously, and to put people in prominent positions to tell this level of truth, it is isolating them. They have the institutions and titles of, well, I'm a reporter. Well, I'm a bureaucrat that were supposed to be instant exonerations and absolutions for the public have been completely discredited. And so they've got nowhere to hide. This is all out in the open now. The social media platform where more ideologies and informations are disseminated than any in the world has been bought by Elon Musk. And he's the Johannes Gutenberg of this story, if you will. What's the difference between Luther and Wycliffe and all the previous reformers before him? They didn't have a printing press to get their messages out to the masses. All right. So they could be snuffed out before their stuff went what we would call today viral. That they can't do that anymore either. And so you are watching the left now having to be as open and honest about who they really are and what they really think as they've ever had to be. And it's self-debilitating at the same time for them.
And I'm talking with Steve Dace. And Steve, that's such spot on commentary. And there's so many different directions we could go with this conversation. But I want to ask you first, to follow up on this moment, I think, of July 13th, and I agree with you, that is and was a turning point in America's history. And what we're seeing with now the release and the impending release of the JFK files, the MLK files, and the acknowledgement by even sitting members of Congress that our own government was involved in that, reportedly, yep, is just incredible. And I don't know that we'll ever get to the truth of Butler, or at least not for the next, maybe 60 plus years. But I personally would not be surprised if something similar and our own government was behind that for exactly the same reasons and all the reasons that you just described. And so when we're, yep, seeing that was not successful, like other prior assassination attempts that were unfortunately completed. We're seeing now this new rise, and J.D. Vance put it this way in his speech at the AI summit, that we're on the brink of a new industrial revolution, and America is going to be at the helm of that. And that is genuinely exciting. And so you have somebody like Elon Musk, who's going to sit down with Trump, or has already, it's already been recorded, but that interview will play on Hannity tonight. And you have the most... the most powerful man in the world in Donald Trump with one of the richest men in the world, Elon Musk, who are completely in lockstep for America first. That is something I think that the left just cannot fathom, and it scares them while it really should excite Americans.
Oh, 100%. And even before, you know, this Lennon-McCartney partnership between Trump and Musk was forged, the left was going about basically self-discrediting all of the institutions that they spent an entire generation or two marching through in accordance with Antonio Gramsci's marching orders. And their own actions and what they had done, the double standards, the hypocrisies, as Christina Pushaw, who works in Governor DeSantis's office, I think she has one of the best pithy descriptions of left-wing ethics that I've ever heard, that it's not hypocrisy, it's hierarchy, okay? If you belong to the right party, if you have the right views, it's very Orwellian, then you can literally just get away with murder. And this stuff was already heavily denting and discrediting these institutions to at least half of the country, right? So they were already limiting principles in terms of their ability to exert pressure. It just came of how many Republicans could we elect that would actually just not care what people who were never going to like them, who were never going to support them, and were never going to vote for them would think about them. I can't tell you, and this is a life lesson, I can't tell you how much easier life becomes and standing up for what you believe in really becomes if you just get yourself to the point. And I mean, I don't care if you're a mom that wants to homeschool her kids. I don't care if you're a dad who's tired of drag queen story hour, or you're a vice president or president of the United States. This principle is true. It becomes so much easier to stand up for what you believe in if you can free yourself of needing the approval of people who will never like you, never vote for you, and never agree with you. And I think that there's been this spell over much of the right for most of my generation, which is this desire. I mean, this thing, we run into this all the time, both in Christian and conservative circles. Hey, John and Kate, they on their new reality show, said they loved Jesus once. Let's give them a massive Zondervan book, contract, and make them celebrities and put them on the cover of our magazines and everything else. Then by season two, John's, burning lung darts and cheating on his wife with the maid, and Kate's moved out. Because we have such an instant desire for credibility and pop culture and all these other places that are never going to align with us en masse. And we've just made so many disastrous choices because of this. And I think that Trump has made some disastrous choices for the same reasons. Like me, I need Maggie Haberman to finally recognize me. Well, half the country won't listen to me, so let me basically make Anthony Fauci prime minister. And I think, the events of the last few years while Trump was out of office, the open persecutions, I think the right has finally come to the realization this will be a zero-sum game, that war is upon you, whether you wish it or not, as Aragorn said, that there's not going to be we're not going to share a country with this because it has no intention of sharing it with us. And it's made it very clear over and over and over again what the stakes we're playing for are. And we had to learn this, I think, while Trump was away. And then I think ultimately he had to learn this, that these aren't just newspaper headlines now. And it's not just MSNBC grifts to try and, stymie and distract your administration. They are going to put you in prison for life if they can, dude. They're going to put you in shackles. All right. They literally tried to kill you. When will you finally learn this isn't pro wrestling? We're playing that the stuff that you say about them is real, and they take it very seriously. And so you need to do the same. And I think we're all, for the most part, okay, we all understand this, except for most of the elected Republicans now. All right. And that's why Trump executing at a high level, Jenna, matters greatly. Staying on message matters greatly. As long as his approval rating is above water, and right now it's at 55%, his entire presidency the first time, the highest he got was 49% right after he got elected. And then when the country kind of briefly unified post-COVID, when everyone was scared to death, most of the rest of his presidency, he was mired in the low 40s. As long as that approval rating stays above water, many of these Republicans will be fearful. It'll be like Tom Tillis, where one week he gets caught basically conspiring against a republic, against his own party, and then the next week is out there giving, when that gets blown up in his face, now suddenly he's out there giving full-throat endorsements of RFK Jr. I think that was going on the last time you and I talked, right? So as long as his approval rating stays there and he stays on message and on task and focused, he'll keep much of the Republican Party in line. But I promise you, at the first sign of weakness, the weakness of many of these people will show their face. And we cannot forget who it is ultimately we are, you know, the feckless people we're ultimately in too many cases aligned with.
Yeah, so well said. And, you know, going back to the approval rating, I think that will stay well above 50% if Trump simply continues to operate with a principled message of America first, rather than this whole concept that the Bible would describe as fear of man. And so when you're talking about why people need the approval of others and they make decisions based on, you know, whether legacy media or even their own constituency or whatever will just like them, and the whole social media drama of influencers just wanting a bunch of followers. I mean, this all, it always goes back to the biblical worldview, but the Bible
no
speaks
doubt.
About the fear of man and talking about mm-hmm. how if you do the right thing and you know that the only person to fear is the judgment and also the approval of God himself and do the right thing, then it doesn't matter ultimately what anybody thinks about you. And that's principle one. But then also the second of continuing to simply operate in the truth and do what is right, then ironically, the right people will laud you for it. I mean, even in my own experience, and you know this very well, Steve, because you're one who I so appreciate, I still have friendship and respect from, but it matters because I know that you are a Christian, and the people who, you know, don't like me for whatever reason, and there's a whole host of different reasons, I don't genuinely care. Because I know that I serve my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and if I am doing the right thing and making the right decisions in my life, the people who criticize me either don't have all the information, they're coming from a different place, or they don't understand the biblical worldview in which I operate. And that's okay. So the point of, I think, the new Trump administration is that he has, perhaps through the assassination attempt, has really gotten over a lot of his fear of man and this almost insane desire to just be loved by everybody. I see him just wanting to boldly do the right thing in this next administration, whether it comes from a place of a biblical worldview or not, I don't know. But at least he is putting principle in his job capacity ahead of fear of man. And that is an incredibly good thing. So I know you have to go in just a couple minutes, but last thoughts on that.
100%. I think you accurately described what went on, and the truth of the matter is, what we're up against is a demonic construct, and I understand what we mean on our side when we say we need to bring back shame. We mean a benign form of it, that there's just certain things that you just didn't do in public because. You know, it was just considered so immoral and profane, it would be costly to you, and that's been lost. The sense of that's why I kind of prefer the term self-awareness to shame, but because biblically the term shame is way more loaded, right? So in the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews, when he talks about Jesus went to the cross, and he says this on our behalf, despising the shame. That's a strong word for hate, loathe. Okay. Well, why? Well, what's the next? The first verse in the Bible, before sin enters the world, is they were naked in the garden; they had no shame. Okay, so shame for the malignant forms of shame is a construct of the enemy. You're not good enough. You'll never be good enough. It's the great example of this is the my favorite scene in Mel Gibson's The Passion in the Garden of Gethsemane, and the androgynous Satan character. And boy, was Mel Gibson 20 years ahead of his time with that. Okay, mm-hmm. The androgynous Satan character whispering in Christ's ear, they won't love you. They won't worship you. They aren't worthy of it. You'll do this for nothing. Right? That's all malignant forms of shaming. Okay, and it's very powerful and potent as a tactic against this, because even though we don't want to recognize it, in our hearts, we are a law unto ourselves, and we all know we're sinners. We all know we are. We just don't want to admit it. And so that form of shaming of, well, you don't have a Ukraine flag, you don't have a mask, you don't have your vax card, you're not one of the good people, that amount of shaming, even if we don't want to align with it, keeps and stifles dissent, because you're always meant to feel like, wait a minute, I must be the only person like this who thinks this way, and I'm isolated, and it's hard to be one against a million. And that's, I think, the subtle thing about what Elon has done with Twitter that has really been empowering. It's not just the free flow of information. It's that it's now we have whole networks of people that are connecting with one another across the country now who realize, you know what, I'm not the only person who thinks like this. I'm not the only person who's voting this way. And I think you saw that. I think Trump also expertly with going on Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn and kind of these mainstream bro dude podcasts, kind of the shame that I couldn't wear a MAGA hat or say these things anymore. I think Harrison Butker had something to do with that early last year too, with his just, I'm not apologizing, I'm not giving in on any of this stuff. The more we do that and the more we push back on it, right? Fear is contagious, but courage is all the more so, okay? And that ultimately, the only power, and you can take this from someone who did over 40 appearances on MSNBC early in my career. There's no there. They don't have some secret knowledge or understanding of how the world works or truth or data. That if you step out and confront them, they're just going to embarrass you with. I think a lot of us believe this. It's not true.
And we'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of all of just the sunshine that is being shown into deep, dark crevices of Washington. And this kind of reset of the board is how I've been describing it. It's almost like if you start a new game of Risk and, you know, everybody picks their countries and it's all different and everything is kind of reset. It feels that way, at least in American politics, where you can't really describe people anymore as Republican or Democrat and actually know what their worldview is and their allegiances. And it's been incredibly fascinating. I mean, you see people like Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. that are on the Trump America First side that 5 minutes ago were Democrats. And then you see people like Senator Tom Cotton, who now reportedly, this just broke yesterday, this headline coming from Trending Politics News, Justin, once trusted GOP senator embroiled in major USAID related scandal. So, I mean, you know, this is somebody who's a Republican, has been a pretty consistent conservative warrior in that sense. But this story is really interesting. So coming from Trending Politics, Senator Tom Cotton, once regarded as a staunch conservative voice in the Republican Party, is now facing major scrutiny over his connections to the International Republican Institute, or the IRI, a taxpayer-funded nonprofit that has received over $130.7 million in federal grants in 2024 alone. According to Data Republican, a leading investigative account on government spending on X, formerly Twitter, Cotton serves as a director at IRI, though he doesn't receive compensation for his role. Despite this, the organization's funding and activities have raised concerns among conservative circles, particularly in relation to its alignment with globalist initiatives that run counter to America First policies. And so it goes on to reveal the recent audits, and this is why, yes, audits, accountability, sunshine are a good thing. And these revelations of what one of 8 core NGOs or non-government organizations affiliated with the U.S. political establishment are doing that have been heavily bankrolled by USAID. And so I think what DOGE is doing and why this is so disruptive to the deep state is because even Republicans are part of this. And so it's going to be, I mean, when you have accountability, facts maybe don't care about your feelings, like Ben Shapiro says, but facts also don't care what party you're aligned with. It just is what it is. And this is a very good thing because we need to shine the light on the uniparty in D.C. as well. So let's bring in John Cardillo, who is a GOP strategist and a good friend of mine, former NYPD, and has been in the political scene for many, many years as a commentator, you know, host, all of those things. And John, you know, I think that the consequence of what Elon Musk is doing with the Trump administration is to really show how even Republicans are not above this type of corruption. And I am all for this. I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. I want to know the truth about this. And I hope that we can actually get good conservatives in Washington moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jenny. Good morning. And always good to be with you. You know, it's disappointing, right? Because Cotton is so reliable. And he's so good on the podium when he's got Democrats in the hot seat or, you know, on the dais in congressional hearings. Senate hearings, but the bigger problem is the tentacles USAID has had for years and years. I don't think you can find a significant NGO or nonprofit that touches the political space on either side of the aisle that didn't take these ridiculously insane amounts of money from USAID. I mean, look, I would venture a guess that most 90-some-odd percent of your audience had never heard of the organization Cotton is involved with because I wasn't familiar with them, and I do this for a living. And this organization that American taxpayers don't even know exists got $100-plus million of their money. So you're right. It doesn't matter which side of the aisle these people are on. You know, we rely on guys like Tom Cotton to be fiscal watchdogs for us, not to be sitting on the boards of the organizations that are taking 100, 110, 130, 150 million taxpayer dollars and doing who knows what with them. Because really, these entities, you know this, we've been around D.C. a long time, you and I, a lot of these entities are unaccountable. They don't really turn out a product. They're there to, you know, self-aggrandize the board members and the other members and try to raise more money by putting out a white paper every now and again. But let's face it, they're not generating any product that brings value to the American taxpayer.
Yeah, and that is such a great articulation of the problem of overtaxation, because if they were actually having to generate a product and provide a service, you know, do something that is actually in the whole marketplace, then we would have something in exchange for a payment. I mean, and that's what for-profit entities have to do. But these NGOs that are just getting the funneling of dollars from the taxpayer through the government and then into them. And then, you know, like some of these religious organizations as well that are then subsidizing illegal immigration and even trafficking. I mean, this is utterly insane. Yeah. And it should be illegal if it's not. But I mean, how in the world is taxpayer dollars funding nonprofits anyway? I mean, that just seems absurd on its face.
Well, it is absurd on its face, right? And without any oversight from the American people whose money it is. But, you know, one of the things that really stands out is just how hysterical Democrats and moderate Republicans are at what Elon is doing. And the nonsense, well, his team is too young. Give me a break. During World War II, we had 17-year-olds as gunners in B-17 bombers. Pilots, your majors, your colonels were 23, 24 years old. So age is a number. There are some very sophisticated minds out there that are younger, whose ages are, you know, 19, 20, 21. Some of these people are brilliant. And especially looking at numbers and deciphering, you know, where the fraud and waste are. But notice that these politicians, the ones who love big governments, the Democrats, the moderate Republicans, they're hysterical. And they're not hysterical because Elon Musk might have access to your finances. No, it's not about your money. They're hysterical because he's looking at how they spend your money. And they're throwing these straw man arguments. We're protecting you. We don't want Elon Musk and Donald Trump to have your data. Newsflash. big data has our data. They've always had our data. And Elon has even been a bit tongue-in-cheek about it. He had control of PayPal. He's like, if I wanted your financial info, I would have had it then. And he's right. It's not about him looking at our info. He doesn't care, a guy worth $400 billion, about the $25,000 in somebody's checking account. Congress is hysterical because he's watching their spending and he's watching their money, the way they spend your money. And it's not good, and people are soon going to find out. And I think that congressional approval rating that hovers around 13% is going to be down around 2 to 3% when America sees what they've been doing with their tax dollars.
Yeah, and sees the uniparty behind this, because this should be one of the things that the regular, common, everyday American taxpayer then coalesces together, Republican or Democrat or anything in between, and pushes back against the establishment and the uniparty to say this is not okay in any way, shape, or form. And yeah, and for, you know, the big bureaucracy that wants, you know, the little guy to be so upset that, you know, maybe Elon will have access to, like, you know, your last four of your social. It's like, what is the billionaire going to do? Like, go open a checking account in my name? Like, you know, get a $200 Visa card? Like, you know, do we really think that that's how they're abusing this? I mean, it's so preposterous. And these people in Doge, they've been vetted, and they also only have the same access that people in the Treasury would otherwise. And so basically they're saying there needs to be this split between their federal employees versus the Trump administration's federal employees. And that's also just absurd. Yeah, go ahead.
It's not a, You nailed it. I mean, they're just upset that you know the names of the people that are looking at your information. They'd rather it be their unelected bureaucrats who are aligned with the Democratic Party and the big government establishment types. They'd rather those anonymous people be looking at your finances. They hate transparency. That's all this is about. Because think about it. We know exactly who's on Elon's team. So if something were to happen, if there was a data breach, we could point to identifiable human beings with names, and they'd be held accountable. But the way it works now, we have no idea at Treasury who looks at our info every day, or at the IRS, right? We have no idea. At the NSA that's listening to everything we do, we know that. So they're hysterical about the transparency. I've always said the majority of D.C., bar a few members, are they see themselves as rulers, not representatives, and we let that happen. We exalted politicians. We put them on celebrity pedestals, when in reality, they represent us and no more, no less. So we're to blame for that as well. But that prevailing mentality in D.C. is just that. They rule us. They don't represent us.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have ruled us instead of just representing us for far too long. And this is why John Cardillo, my special guest this morning, this is why we need this type of transparency. And for a bureaucracy that has claimed for so long that they want transparency and accountability, they're, you know, for both sides, it's always Republicans calling for that against, you know, the evil machine of the Democrats, and the Democrats saying, well, you know, Republicans are doing all of this nonsense and we need accountability for them. They've gone back and forth while genuinely just protecting each other. I mean, you and I have said for a long time that both parties actually need each other in order to survive in Washington. And what we're seeing with the outsider in the big bureaucracy sense that is Trump, he's not anymore a Washington outsider, but he is at least not part of this machinery that is the deep state of the uniparty. We're seeing that he's coming in and actually removing that whole piece of the wall that has stopped and has been the gatekeeper, basically, to get this type of actual transparency and accountability in D.C. And that's a really good thing. So, you know, where do we go from here when we have revelations like this with even, you know, members of the conservative side like Tom Cotton? I'm sure that he won't be the last, unfortunately. But where does this ultimately go? Like, what's the projection for the next 4 years or even, well, you know, 40 days?
You know, what I hope happens is that Republicans, especially those who we feel should be more conservative because they've demonstrated that or portrayed that, that this will scare them, right? You said it best on the intro. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. And hopefully that'll scare them. And I hope, I mean, I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing, that we finally have a Justice Department willing to put teeth behind the threats. And I think Pam Bondi is finally willing to do that, to go after some of these people who might have crossed the line or who lied under oath, right? How many of our people, Jenna, you know better than anybody, got prosecuted on 1001 false statements violations and the most innocuous stuff? They said they walked right instead of walking left because it was 4 years ago and they forgot. Well, the Biden Justice Department had no problem prosecuting them as if they were mass murderers for a verbal mistake. It's time for our Justice Department now under Pam Bondi to start doing the same, because we're not talking about a misstatement. We're talking about billions upon billions of taxpayer money apparently being misused.
Yeah, and this goes back to something, John, that I read in the first segment from Governor DeSantis in response to, you know, of course, the left that is melting down over, you know, the Justice Department is no longer independent. We saw this through Pam Bondi's confirmation hearings. That was, you know, the biggest thing was, oh, you're going to be too pro-Trump. And it's like, you're going to actually be too much part of this executive team that actually is the executive branch, is basically what they were saying. But I want to get your response in just the last few minutes to this, because I want to underscore this and read this again, because it's so important. And I think that Governor DeSantis put it so well. He responded to the AP's headline saying the Justice Department's independence is threatened as Trump's team asserts power over cases and staff. And he says the Justice Department is not, quote unquote, independent of the elected chief executive, but is constitutionally accountable to him. The cries of independence from the left slash media are rooted in their desire to have a heads I win, tails you lose scenario, where the bureaucracy exists to facilitate a leftist administration, but to frustrate a conservative administration, election results notwithstanding. That is not how our Constitution is structured or how our government is supposed to function. Amen and amen to that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, real quick. Right. If Bill Barr had a meeting with Donald Trump in the Oval Office, they were screaming, he's corrupt. They're having closed door meetings. He's acting as Trump's personal lawyer. Right. Preposterous. When Barack Obama called Attorney General Eric Holder the only U.S. AG ever to be held in both civil and criminal contempt of Congress, when Obama called him his wingman, oh, my God, the media and Democrats cheered that. Then it was OK. So not only is DeSantis 100% right, he's backed up by evidence of exactly how Dems and Republicans have been treated in the same situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to go to break here, John. I could talk to you for a lot longer. But you're so right that, you know, this is just another layer of hypocrisy that the left and the Democrats, it's totally fine when it's extra constitutional or even unconstitutional for them when a Democrat is in office. But then when it comes to Trump's administration, then suddenly, you know, the board is reset and all of the rules change. And that is not how the Constitution operates. It doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican. I mean, there weren't even Democrats and Republicans at the founding of our nation and the ratification of the Constitution in its original form. It just, the rules are what they are and they apply equally to everyone. That's actually what equal protection under the law is supposed to mean. But John, really appreciate it. You can follow John Cardillo on X. I encourage you to do so. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If we have learned anything from the 2024 election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. So would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor 5 ultrasounds. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell phone and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or you can visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And, you know, one of the best speeches, and we're not going to have time now to play this whole thing. I was kind of thinking we wouldn't, but I was hoping maybe potentially we would. But one of the best speeches I think that you will listen to, if you have 15 minutes, go and listen to Vice President J.D. Vance's full speech on artificial intelligence. This was at the Paris AI Summit. And he's talking about AI regulation. And I want to just play the opening to this, but you've got to listen to the full thing, because if you are kind of super fascinated by AI like I am, and that this is the brink of the next, as he describes it, the next industrial revolution, and you're seeing the potential of AI, some of obviously the guardrails that should be the regulatory structure around it, but very loosely, not over-regulation, not bias, not only allowing what government believes is okay speech versus government designated misinformation, you know, none of those things. And we can talk about all of that, and we have on the show, but all of that is very fascinating. But if you have not yet kind of become fascinated by AI, I would encourage you to listen to this speech, because it should spark that type of fascination with this. It's often that when there is a new technology, especially as we get older, you know, it's like, well, I'm very comfortable with, you know, where I am. Like I clerked for a judge back in college that just refused to go to any sort of online repository. It was like, no, paper files, physical files is always how we've done it. That's always how we're going to do it, you know? And okay, that's the system that obviously, you know, he grew up in. But as technology advances, sometimes there are better ways to do things for efficiency, for cost-saving measures. I mean, there's a wide variety of, you know, policy positives that that you could get into. Some technology may not ultimately be as useful for whatever type of productivity you're looking at. But overall, this whole type of AI as a helpful tool, particularly to aggregate research and even promote and spark ideas in creativity and some of these things, is really fascinating. And the fact that J.D. Vance is talking about America being at the helm of this and will be the world leader and will ensure that America does not allow any of the other foreign countries or any other, you know, countries' leaders to censor speech or have this sort of government labeled misinformation, I think is so important. And it was so refreshing to hear, you know, the first millennial who's been in one of the highest two offices in the land actually have a very articulate grasp on artificial intelligence and not be at all afraid of it, but look at it as we've got to understand how we use this moving forward. So before I continue, this is the opening of Vance's speech on AI.
I'm not here this morning to talk about AI safety, which was the title of the conference a couple of years ago. I'm here to talk about AI opportunity. When conferences like this convene to discuss a cutting-edge technology, oftentimes I think our response is to be too self-conscious, too risk-averse. But never have I encountered a breakthrough in tech that so clearly calls us to do precisely the opposite. Now, our administration, the Trump administration, believes that AI will have countless revolutionary applications in economic innovation, job creation, national security, healthcare, free expression, and beyond. And to restrict its development now will not only unfairly benefit incumbents in the space, it would mean paralyzing one of the most promising technologies we have seen in generations.
So he goes on to then lay out kind of his four basic principles of where America and the Trump administration is going to take AI. And again, I would encourage you, it's only a 15-minute speech. Go find it. It's all over X, social media, embedded in articles and all of this. Find it and listen to it. Because one of the other things, even if you know, kind of ignore the topic itself, one of the things that he's talking about is how much the United States is going to be a world leader. And he gets into this whole idea of censorship versus free expression and using new tools that are available like AI as a vehicle to have better creators. And when he's talking about, you know, incumbents in the space, kind of big tech, and then how he juxtaposes that with what he describes as little tech, kind of the little guy. And remember, I mean, people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were the little guy at one point, and then they created new technology and became these giants in the marketplace. But those started as smaller ideas that then developed into a much bigger type of technology that ultimately overhauled and revolutionized the way we live life, the way we interact with each other, the way we communicate. Even social media, you know, that was an idea from a college kid initially, right? And that has completely revolutionized, for in some good ways and definitely some bad ways, but that's always true for technological new developments. You can use it in good ways, and you can create jobs with this type of technology, or you can use it in bad ways. And what defines good versus bad, of course, there are some principled stands, of course, like censorship is bad, we know that. Then there are arguable policy ways and policy arguments that you can take on AI specifically, or you can take on a kind of any new technology. And I think it's very incumbent for not just conservatives, but Christians as a whole, to understand that we need to understand AI, the new technology, where it's going, and have positions on this that are grounded in truthful principles, instead of just saying, oh, well, AI is being, you know, used in this and that way, and so, you know, we shouldn't use it as a whole, and I've never used ChatGPT, and I don't want to, because, you know, maybe something Mark of the Beast, you know, or whatever. That kind of seems to be the Christian go-to, right? I think that is a very purposefully, intentionally naive position from people who don't want to understand the possible benefits of this technology. Now, full disclosure, I mean, I love ChatGPT because it can aggregate a lot of research and condense it in a way that's digestible. It can put together, you know, some suggestions on outlines for various things. I mean, there are so many different ways that you can use it. Now, of course, that will never replace the analysis that goes into a human being's product, especially, for example, just in the legal space. You know, I know a lot of fellow lawyers that will use ChatGPT to kind of just say, okay, what's kind of a form of, you know, what I'm trying to produce? But you still have to go back in and ensure that the citations are accurate. You have to go in and you have to modify things on it. But it kind of will help you at least build a form and a structure around what you're doing. And that's really helpful. And it actually increases productivity. And it allows you to create more with your own analysis in a shorter period of time. So there are a wide variety of ways that AI can be helpful. I mean, even for a Christian, for example, it should never replace, like my producer and I were talking before the show, of, you know, some pastors are using AI to develop entire sermons. Now, that's probably problematic. Like, if you don't know as a pastor where to go in scripture and research it yourself, and you're just relying on whatever AI spits back at you, not so great. But if you're saying, you know, okay, where in the Bible, you know, are all of the verses that contain, you know, this premise or this word, and it aggregates very quickly, that's no different than, you know, the Blue Letter Bible or some of these other online tools that previously were so expensive that you could only access them with maybe, you know, if you're at a mega church or at a seminary or something like that. And so this kind of tool that aggregates things, and then you can go in and say, okay, is the context around this exactly what I'm looking for? And then you can go in with your own analysis. That matters. And this type of ability for anybody to access it, and it's not gatekept by some of these exorbitant subscription costs, is really amazing. And I think it will genuinely revolutionize technology, productivity, but also the average person's ability to engage better in some of these spaces. And so all of this to say, I was fascinated by Vance's speech because I think it represented so clearly the first time that someone that high level in the United States government was embracing, saying, let's not be scared of the new technology, which is always the case, right? It seems like, but to actually embrace moving forward in a positive way, saying we don't want overregulation. Here are clear boundaries and guidelines. Here are the clear principles. But the United States is going to lead the way on this, and we are going to ensure that the development of this is for the positive good of society, which of course are the principles that are embedded in our First Amendment. So I love this. I love where it's going, and I love the fact that the first millennial in office is the one taking the helm of this. Again, go and listen to Vance's full speech on AI. We're already out of time, and you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. Have a wonderful Tuesday.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.